You're listening to Awake, a men's podcast by Fellowship Bible Church. Welcome back to another episode of the Awake podcast. We are super excited to be back with you as we continue our series on our calling as men. And today we're going to be focusing on the topic of parenting. But before we get into the episode, I wanted to just share a couple of announcements with you guys of a few things that are coming up for men's ministry. First off, our Men's Awake study is going to be starting September 11th. It's a Wednesday morning at 6:30 a.m. here at the church, and we still have a lot of space, and we're ready for you guys to come and join us to spend 6 weeks diving into God's Word, diving into relationship and conversation to see what it looks like to live with integrity as men in all of the different aspects of our life, in our words, in our conduct, in our faith, our love, our purity, and many more. So come and join us for that. All the information is on the website at fellowshiptopeka.com/events. On a little bit lighter note, we're also going to be starting our fall and winter season of golf. We had a great time this summer spending time with guys out on the golf course at Western Hills, and we are going to continue that momentum out at 8 Iron Therapy on the second Saturdays of the month starting in September. So be on the lookout for registration to open up for that here in the next week, and you'll be able to sign up. Space is limited, so if you want to join us for that, be sure to sign up early. We hope to see you there. But with that in mind, I want to kind of shift our conversation to introducing our guests for the day. Today, we've got Curtis Clam and Mitch Miller joining us for the podcast. Mm-hmm. Guys, welcome to the Awake podcast.
Thank you, Liam.
You bet.
It's good to have you here. So yeah. I invited you guys on to have a conversation about the topic of parenting. So I want to first off spend a little bit of time just hearing about your families. Tell me about your spouse, your kids, what ages they are, where they're at in life right now. So Curtis, if you want to start, would love to get a little update.
Yeah, my family is a small family. We all live here in Topeka. My wife, Debbie, is my best friend, and we just enjoy all sorts of things here in this season of being empty nesters now, of hiking and traveling and serving, and that's been so much fun.
And you guys have done the Grand Canyon rim to rim how many times?
Twice.
Yeah. Once rim to rim and once rim to rim to rim?
Right.
Okay. That's extreme.
It is doable. It is an epic adventure. I would recommend it to anyone.
And you're here to tell us about it.
Yeah. Despite, I know people were concerned we might not return, but we did.
Hey, so. It's always a fear, right?
Yeah. And then I've got two sons. Both of them are just awesome. I couldn't be more proud of them. Chandler is 29, lives here in Topeka. And Spencer is 25, and he lives in Topeka also. Mm-hmm. They're both chasing after the Lord. They enjoy serving. Chandler is married to Anna, and they just had a little girl, our first granddaughter, five and a half months ago. So we're just getting, we're all enjoying this season of having a new clam around.
Yeah. And so not just parenting, but grandparenting life.
Yes, indeed. Yep.
So Mitch, what about you?
Well, my wife and I have been married 47 years, Fran and I, and we have two daughters. Mm-hmm. And they're in their early 40s. Both have two kids, our four grandkids. So the Kansas City grandkids are senior and freshman in high school. Mm-hmm. And the ones in Columbia, Missouri are, let's see, sixth grade and third grade. Mm-hmm. So Brianna is our daughter in Kansas City, Chelsea in Columbia. Two great son-in-laws, both love to play golf, which is a big plus in our relationship. Yes. So, you know, all their families love the Lord, involved in their church, involved in summer camps and just you name it, very active in their relationship with Jesus.
Very cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Very cool. So whenever I hear Joe talk about parenting, he always kind of puts it in the three categories of the time of life that you're in, whether it's the caregiving stage when it's like you're all hands in and you're, you know, keeping that child alive and helping them to grow up. That's the stage I'm in with Noah. He's only 10 months old, so he's completely and utterly dependent upon us. Yep. And then you guys remember the coaching phase is, you know, the kids are getting a little bit older and you're kind of guiding them through different decisions and helping them make those decisions. But now you guys are in the consulting phase where your kids are grown, they're in their careers, they're with families, they're making their own decisions. And so it'll be awesome to just kind of learn from the wisdom that you guys have had as you've moved through those seasons of life. But I think one major thing that I wanted to ask about is when did faith become a part of your personal lives And then how did you incorporate that initially into your families? Curtis?
Yeah. I went through a confirmation class in the Methodist Church as a kid. Kind of started to understand things, but I wouldn't say I really accepted Christ till I was about 21. Mm-hmm. That was a real part of my life, but it wasn't something I actively pursued and really until I started coming here in 2004. And this is where the match kind of got set to the fuel, and, mm-hmm. and we just really started to catch the vision.
And this was after you were married to Debbie?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we'd been married a few years. Chandler was a little guy then.
Okay.
And well, Spencer was even littler. So, yeah, we moved here from another church, and we just really got serious about wanting to grow, mm-hmm. to understand the Lord, to be to reflect more of his goodness mm-hmm. in the world and just to make our lives count for the kingdom.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. And Mitch, what about for you?
Well, for me, grew up in the church, lived literally 100 yards away from the church that mm-hmm. I attended in Tecumseh. And in high school, was active in Youth for Christ, always had a great activity out at Shawnee Heights High School, mm-hmm. And so was active in that. But once graduated from high school, immediately started working, found out that thought that I knew what was going on, mm-hmm. so I kind of strayed away from the church for 3 or 4 years and just kind of lived my life and did what I wanted to do. Once Fran and I got married, within a couple of years, we realized we really need the Lord back in our lives. Mm-hmm. And so we made a big effort to get back active in that little church out in Tecumseh, Methodist Church, and mm-hmm. Was very active there with the youth group and stuff. And then our girls came along. We ended up moving to Topeka Lutheran School, where mm-hmm. both girls graduated and went clear through Topeka Lutheran School. So we were very active there in the parent-teacher organization and with the teachers. You knew everybody. We attended Lutheran Church. It was a great time for us and great friendships that still to this day are really there. Mm-hmm. But probably the biggest thing is when our daughters went to college. Mm-hmm. Once they went to college, and both of them went to Kansas State, they got very involved in a couple of organizations, Christian Challenge yep. and Navigators. Mm-hmm. And they became very involved in a couple of great churches over there. So about once a month or even a couple times a month, we would attend those churches with our daughters and really mm-hmm. saw a whole different aspect of a relationship with Christ mm-hmm. than what we were having at the previous church we were at yeah. and where the girls grew up. And that totally changed our lives to the point that invitation to come to fellowship well over 20 years ago now mm-hmm. and haven't looked back since. Mm-hmm.
Very cool. So you guys good. Both pretty early on in your marriages and in your relationships with your kids or having kids saw the importance of having that community, that church community around you personally, definitely. But also around your kids. Mm-hmm. Like what were some of the things that you guys pursued as a couple to be involved in and wanted your kids to be around early on? If you can think back to some of those.
When we came here, I remember we hadn't been here very long, and Joe was, we were having a dinner with him once, and he was pitching the idea of the mountain program mm-hmm. starting, and he was super excited, and it just sounded so out of the world, out of this world, but something we'd never heard of before. And I remember at the end, he started saying, he goes, "And I want you to be a leader. I can see you. I can see you doing that." I couldn't see me doing it, but you know, to have his endorsement was really yeah. encouraging, and so. That was probably the spark that got things going, and both Debbie and I then got involved in that. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it was kind of for multiple reasons. One, we wanted to, you know, we wanted to be obedient to a calling like that, but also we wanted to serve in ministry where our kids were,
yeah.
where we could be with them, not to watch them or watch over them or to protect them, but just so we'd be hearing the same messages, mm-hmm. we'd be in the same locations, we could have discussions later about what we'd learned that night, and. So that kind of set the foundation for how we'd live the next 20-some years mm-hmm. of just serving wherever they were and investing all of our time, energy, and talent that we could in those ministries.
That's awesome.
And yeah, it was fun to do that with yeah. them and watch them grow up and meet their friends and meet their parents, mm-hmm. the parents of their friends. And, yeah, it was a rich time.
Yeah. What about for you guys?
Well, for us, our girls were at Topeka Lutheran School, mm-hmm. and so they— small school class, you know, the entire class had 20 or 25 kids in it tops. Mm-hmm. And so those kids all got to know each other very well. They attended church together. They went to Lutheran camp together. And so we just saw that that was something, because it was a small school, you know, they needed people to be involved. And so we got involved in helping lead those youth groups, mm-hmm. and some of the camping opportunities. We really enjoyed doing it. Well, I enjoyed it. Fran probably wouldn't tell you quite so much, but she went, and the girls had a great time, and we just really got to know the Lord so much better through those kids and meeting them, you know, in their high school years. Once they separated Topeka Lutheran, it only went to eighth grade. Mm-hmm. Then they went into different schools, and yet they still came back in the youth group at the churches, and mm-hmm. they still did the summer camps. And so you saw them, you knew their families, you knew their parents. And so that relationship really helped us grow. And that's where we found a place to get started,
yeah.
was in those kind of activities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the thing I love about what you guys are talking about is that in both cases, you didn't seek to just outsource discipleship of your kids to True. Other places. Like you, mm-hmm. you were involved in those spaces and trying to be intentional in those spaces, not only to mm-hmm. support the organization that you were a part of, whether mm-hmm. it was Topeka Lutheran or the church that you guys belong to, but also just to continue those conversations with your kids to be a part of all of life. It's mm-hmm. it just kind of speaks of just being integrated and being integrated in the life of faith as a family that mm-hmm. I think is super mm-hmm. important. That's one of the things that I don't know how many parents know that we have something called a parent queue or a family queue for our children's ministry, that each week our children's ministry team puts together these guides of this is what we learned this weekend. So if you're not like serving in the children's ministry and hearing the message, you can get this little family queue or parent queue and learn about what your kids are learning about mm-hmm. and have guides for continuing the conversations as you're going, which I just think is super cool.
Yeah, that's a great resource.
Yeah, and I'm mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to doing mm-hmm. stuff like that with Noah. You know, right now we're kind of in the season where our disciplines with him are pretty limited because he does not know what's going on most of the time. He's like, are you putting food in my mouth? Are you rolling a soccer ball or a basketball in my direction? Or is mom around? Because that's basically all he wants. But one of the things that we've tried to start with him is exposing him to the Word of God, mostly through song. That's been kind of the primary that's thing great. That we've been doing. And so I sing songs to him every night before bed, and we pray over him. We have a little mm-hmm. children's Bible that we're reading with him just to get him some awareness, but he's mostly just wanting to flip the pages back and forth mm-hmm. while I'm trying to read. So
sure.
I don't always get through the story in a linear fashion, which is fine. But can you guys think of, over the course of caregiving, coaching, consulting, what have been some of the most helpful practices that you guys remember to help your kids grow in their faith or to help them take their faith into their own hands? Kind of big question. Yeah. So,
you know, I think of, you know, the being active in their life and asking them questions. How did it go tonight? What were you guys learning? What did you do in Sunday school or in a youth group and getting a conversation going one-on-one, eye to eye, not over text, not over email or whatever, but sitting there and talking face to face. In this world today, that seems to be a very difficult thing to do,
yes.
You know, with all the technology that's out there and everybody wants yes. to be staring at their phones mm-hmm. or whatever. When my girls were growing up, that wasn't there. It mm-hmm. wasn't active, mm-hmm. you know, 20, 22, 25 years ago, whatever it might be. So we really, that was very beneficial. But I see my grandkids, especially the older two that are in high school, their mom and dad really use that technology to create conversations. And then they put the phones down and they talk about it. Mm. And they go back and forth and discuss what they learned and what they saw. They do a Bible study together mm-hmm. remotely.
Yeah.
My granddaughter and grandson will sit in the parking lot 5 minutes before they go into class and do a quick little thing that they send to their mom. Hmm. And then that evening they'll talk about it and review it together. So there's different ways to engage them, but there's nothing like being face to face, one on one, that makes a difference.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think the things you suggest are a great first step, and I applaud you for that, getting those rhythms established.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't, as they get a little older, sometimes it feels a little awkward starting a new rhythm. Like praying with kids before they go to bed. I mean, that first night, I remember I was just terrified to go in there and do that. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. It wasn't like I was going to talk about something we didn't all, weren't all unified in, but it just felt odd. But that became a rhythm that we stuck with. We almost always ate dinner together at the table without a TV or phones, and everyone was on board with that. Yeah. So that was a time where we could do like you were saying, you know, just talk through the events of the day or challenges or just asking interesting questions like what would you do in this situation or things like that. And then as they got older, we wanted to provide a safe environment for them to hang out with friends and stuff. So we would open our house and have them over and they could have a good time and it was safe. And that became kind of a rhythm too, to try to do that, I don't know, once a month or something like that. So lots of good memories from that. Lots of weird smells too, but you know,
I can't even imagine what that would be like. One of the things that you just said, Curtis, that just kind of jumped out to me was just the feeling of it feeling like almost awkward or uncomfortable to start something new.
Yep.
And I just really resonate with that. Even with Noah, when I am singing to him, I feel awkward doing it.
Okay.
But I know that it's good. But I don't, I think that I want to get to a point where it's not awkward, that it's just such a part of our life as a family that singing praise to God, reading the word, praying together, having those kinds of conversations about like, what would you do in this situation with a faith perspective, or sharing Devo conversations that I, you know, my kids did in the morning, they talk about it later in the day. It's like, I want that to be normalized, but it just takes, I think, some courage to get over that hump initially to kind of work through that. Do you remember what it took for you to just kind of push through and just do that the first time?
I totally resonate with what you're saying there. Yeah. And I think it was just really hard to walk in there and do that prayer the first night. And I think I had to give myself a countdown. Okay, I'm going to do it in the next 15 minutes.
I love it. Yeah.
And I'd hold myself to that. And that's ultimately what I ended up doing. But it does take courage. I think the enemy's working against us on that stuff. He's putting doubts in our heads. And we've got to stand up to that.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying it's going to be easy for anybody to do it that first time. But I encourage you to do it because the reward is just so worth it.
Yeah, absolutely.
It deepens the relationship.
And we have, again, in our children's ministry, we have these like shadow boxes that have little foam balls in there that count down the number of weeks you have with your child from birth until like 18. And it's just insane to think about if the plan is, I'm going to let the church be the primary discipler of my kids. We get maybe an hour and a half with them a week, maybe. That's if you're here every single weekend, which doesn't always happen. You know, travel, busyness, all kinds of different stuff. It's like, but we get the majority of the time with our kids / the schools that they're a part of as well. So it's like, how can we as dads, as families, make the most of that time? And it's by pushing through that awkward and discomfort to have those conversations. And I love what you talked about that your daughter's doing with her kids to that they have a shared devotional that they do, and then they kind of circle back on it later in the day. I think that's really cool. I'm going to definitely try and file that one away in my mind to think about. You know, and I know there's a book that's been really impactful for me is when I found out that I was going to have a son, I was like, I need some resources on how to raise sons. And the book by John Tyson called Intentional Fathers. I don't know if you guys have heard of that one.
Okay.
Joe talked about it to me a couple of years ago. And I was just like, I'm going to file that one away. And I read it. And he talks about the importance of helping your kids work through these transitions from childhood to adulthood. And that being one of the primary things that parents do is not keeping kids in childhood, but helping them move into that stage of adulthood. And he talks about these transitions of them moving from realizing that it's not all about you, it's about others. Life is not easy. It's not always about making the easy decision, but the difficult decision to not live for the temporary, but for the eternal. It just is something that I'm trying to keep on the front of my mind. And so I just say that to recommend it to anybody listening that he is also in the process of working on a similar book for raising daughters in a similar way. Oh, good. So highly recommend some of that work by John Tyson. But I want to shift gears a little bit and talk about how did you and your spouse, your wives, kind of work together or think through the vision or plan that you had for your kids. Did you guys have a time where you kind of worked through that together, or was this more of like you guys kind of had these ideas yourselves? Like, what did that look like to work with your spouse to kind of chart a direction for how you're going to raise your kids?
You know, there's a lot of, I think back, you know, again, this is 25 years ago or more, but I think back to times when we talked about decisions that they were going to do something together. They were going to be maybe it was when they were going to get a job, you know, a part-time job, or we're going to be involved in a certain activity at school. And we talked about, was that a good thing? Did it make sense? Rarely did we say no, but we did there a couple times. Sometimes you have to make the decision and move forward with it yourself. I can think of times when I did that, and most of the time it worked out, but not always. You know, my decision wasn't always the perfect one, but sometimes you're on the spot. You've got to move forward with something. And you've got to be brave enough, kind of like you said, that countdown to, okay, I've got to do this. I've got to make sure that my child is in this activity or involved in this or not involved in something that maybe could harm them or be not be beneficial to their upbringing. So giving them that, but giving them enough leeway to grow as a young, as a teenager. I'm thinking of the teenage years mostly that I'm thinking of, letting them grow a little bit, letting them have that extra little bit of rope, a little bit of extra line, you know, to get something done and to do something, and praising them when it goes well.
Absolutely.
And when it doesn't go well, being ready to step in and talk about the consequences of a situation that happened, that they made a decision that wasn't a great decision. So.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I think sometimes things just came up that we didn't expect to, and I've just completely pulled the rug out from under us. And but we wanted to be unified. We wanted to be wise, and we're both people who are kind of verbal processors in that. We kind of need, well, we could do this or we could do that, or but have you thought about this kind of thing? So we often had what we would call garage conversations, where we would excuse ourselves to go out in the garage and kind of navigate what our response would be. And we always wanted to show a unified front on things. And I think we did that well. And we may not have, just like you, we may not have agreed completely, but we couldn't come up with a better idea at the time, and in a direction had to be determined. So that worked out really good.
You know, it's interesting to think of his situation versus mine. I raised two girls. He raised two guys. Totally different scenario. My wife was very involved, more so in the upbringing of those girls during those teenage years, when there's female things coming forward and it's a whole different world. And I kind of excuse myself to the back bedroom, you know, in some of those scenarios. And yet Fran would always explain, this is what happened. This is why we did it this way. And then, you know, generally I was in agreement of that. I mean, it was not anything to do, but yet with boys, kind of a different thing. I don't know how much more you were involved, or Debbie, but I don't know.
Well, they do a lot of spontaneous things without thinking about them. but we definitely, we decided we were not going to be parents that would swoop in and rescue them from the consequences of their decisions or actions. And that usually went really well. I mean, that kind of... Yeah, it was hard sometimes to not say something, but it was the result of something they did. So we would have a lot of talk about consequences, and that, you know, all of our actions have consequences, and you just can't escape that. So that was a common discussion that we would have.
I appreciate that, because where we're at right now, like, Noah doesn't understand the consequences of his actions. So him crawling towards the stairs, he doesn't understand that that's going to be very dangerous for him. But once we get to that coaching stage, like, the coach doesn't get on the court and shoot the basket for his players. Like they are learning how to play the game themselves, mm-hmm. and we're there to help draw up the plays and also to show, like, hey, this is why this probably didn't work the way you hoped that it did.
Yeah.
But I'm kind of curious for you guys, did you find the transition from caregiver to coach more difficult or coach to consultant more difficult? Because you guys are in the consultant phase now. Which one did you feel like was a harder transition?
Oh, man. I think it was the coach to caregiver, the coach to consultant.
Yeah.
From caregivers, it's just happening so fast.
Sure,
I'm not even sure you realize you're in it.
Yeah.
But just to no longer be telling them what to do, to no longer be constantly helping them navigate things without mm-hmm. their coming to you first. That's just a hard adjustment because you're wanting to tell them there may be decisions they're making. You think, I don't think that's a good one, but you got to just let it go. And one of the things we had learned was we kind of had heard of what they called a good neighbor approach. And okay. I don't know if you've heard of that, but mm-mm. just imagine like your neighbor came over to your house one day and said, oh, Liam, I wanted to see last night how far I could drive my car blindfolded without hitting something.
Okay.
And I've ended up running into a car. I mean, if it was your neighbor, you wouldn't go, you're such an idiot. Why would you do something yeah. so stupid? You'd go, wow, what led to that? And
yeah.
what are you going to do about it?
Mm.
And so that's an extreme example. My kids have never done anything like that,
but
to be just to help them process it
yeah.
and navigate it and for them to propose what they're going to do about it, how they're going to resolve it or rectify the situation. That's been helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I would agree with the same thing, you know, to get to the consultant phase. You've gone through experiences in your life that didn't work or mm-hmm. weren't the greatest, and you know that if they take that step, it's probably not going to be good.
Yeah.
I can't say that I've never gone forward with a suggestion.
Mm-hmm.
I have, but I've usually done it in a way that, would you like to hear what my thoughts are on this?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
I got some advice for you if you'd like it, and rarely do they say, no, don't want your advice.
Mm-hmm.
But the key is that getting permission.
Yeah, right? Getting permission.
Not presuming that you can
throw it out mm-hmm. there. Yeah. So that's been, but it's been really good because both of my son-in-laws are great guys, and they both have come to me separately outside of their wives and said, I've got something I want to talk to you about. Will you make time for me? Oh, absolutely. Sure.
Mm-hmm.
What do you got? You know, whether it was face-to-face or over the phone or whatever. So, you know, if you've built that relationship with your family, with your daughters and their spouses or your kid and their spouse, that's a real rewarding scenario for me to be able to offer that. And hopefully it turns out to be something that's beneficial for all. When we can go back to the word of the Lord and say, God didn't think this was a great idea. Look what happened when this happened here.
Yes.
And they're both in the Word. They both attend church regularly and men's studies and so on. And they'll say, yeah, that's a good point. Mm-hmm. I hadn't thought of it that way, you know, looked at it in that perspective. Mm-hmm. So,
how did you guys know when it was the right time to transition to the consulting phase? Or did they decide that? Or did you just kind of know they're at a point now in their lives that I need to shift in the way that I relate to them?
I think it just went when they graduated high school.
Really?
That we would just make a hard shift there.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean you're not tempted all the time.
Sure,
to offer suggestions.
How many kids make extreme mistakes after high school? It's like,
yeah,
I remember what I was like right after I graduated high school. It's like, I probably needed a little more coaching than I had at the time, and that's okay.
Yeah, I can remember.
Yeah, I'd say mine was about the same too, probably along there. And certainly when it went from that step from graduating high school to marriage, which for both of them was five years after mid-20s, 23, 24 years old, that even kind of ramped it up another level in that consulting phase.
Right.
Because now there was somebody else giving them advice, their spouse, which they need to listen to and take part in and be active with. So then it kind of stepped back, but it became a little different phase, a little different scenario, you know, for that to happen.
Hmm.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, probably as they get towards being out of college, then they're really assuming all responsibility for everything at that point. So, that There should be another level after consulting.
Another level.
I don't know what that is.
It's after they're
senior consultant.
Your insurance.
Senior coach or consultant, yes.
After they're no longer drawing from your insurance.
Yeah, because that is a... That'd be 26.
Senior consultants make a lot more money, too. I mean,
that's true. Yeah. Can start asking for a little bit more for that advice that they get from you. Yeah, if you guys could, like, looking at where I'm at right now in my stage of life, slash even some of the guys who listen who are in more of that coaching stage, if you could give us a piece of advice on the ways that we spend time with our kids or how to prioritize time with our kids, whether it's intentionality and devotional time or whatever, what advice would you give to caregivers and coaches, specifically to the men and their relationships?
I mean, I think you have to determine what your priorities are. Mm-hmm. And that's probably a discussion with our spouse. What are we going to value the most? And like we wanted to make it to church at least 51 times a year.
Love it.
And so to make that happen, we came up with another tenet that we were only going to let our kids do one sport at a time. Mm. And I know there were times they wanted to do two, but in hindsight, I think that worked out well. It helped us maintain our priorities. It kept them from getting stressed out or overwhelmed in situations. And man, that was gold for us. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we didn't want to get into just spending every night chasing around from place to place and practice to practice. And everybody's just too tired then when they get home to even relate anymore.
Yeah.
So that was kind of the foundation that we set for that.
Was that a family decision or a you and Debbie decision?
It was our decision.
Yeah.
But we did our best to articulate that to our kids, and I think they could see the wisdom in it.
Yeah, that's awesome.
That doesn't mean the question, they didn't ask for the opportunity a few times, but that's how I recall.
Yeah, like that. Let the value kind of lead.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah, I think back to those times, especially in high school and what have you, that they weren't as involved in so many of those activities like you talked about, like wanting to do two sports at a time. But they were involved in a lot of music activities. They did play sports and different things. But, you know, one thing that I wished I would have done more that I see my daughters doing is spending time just before bed with their kids. Mm. You can read all the studies that talk about put your phone down before you go to bed, mm-hmm. how it impacts you during the night, you know, et cetera, et cetera. They spend time with their kids just before bed, you know, with 5 minutes of reading, of a prayer. My 9-year-old grandson, ever since he was a baby, I mean, pretty much 3 or 4 years old, he gets sung to. Mm-hmm. He's got 3 or 4 songs. And so when we stay with them in Columbia, which is 4 or 5 times a year, he'll say, "Papa, you need to come in and sing to
me. Time to sing."
Yeah. And you hear this terrible noise coming out of his room. Yeah. It's me, but
it's like, "Papa, no more singing.
we're doing away in a manger, man." You know, but yet he likes it, and he wants to be a part of it. He wants that, and so spending time with your kids in a way like that, I think makes a huge difference. Finding a way to be with them, you know, a few hours, a few minutes, even a day, they're going to remember that for many, many years to come. So,
yeah, there was a statistic I heard one time that talked about on average, parents get maybe 15 minutes of actual face-to-face conversation with their kids a day, which just kind of baffles me. But I think especially in our day and age right now that, you know, Allie and I are trying to raise kids, I don't think that the difficulties and temptations are harder. I just think they're different than what past parents had to deal with. I think screens have brought in a unique challenge, but not one that I think is not overcomable by any means.
Right.
But it definitely has made me want to be more intentional with the face-to-face. And I think a value that I've tried to have early on and often with Noah is that I want him to have my eyes. I want him to see my face, and I want to see his face. And from the get-go, it's like I have a connection with my son that I love and value and want to nurture and develop. And I love it when he gives me his eyes and smiles and laughs and all of those things. It's like, I see the kind of relationship that I want to have with him and our future kids down the road. And I'm trying to remember that doesn't happen without work now. right. and the investment now.
Yep.
And I think you guys are getting to experience the fruit of a lot of that work in the stage of life that you're in, and mm-hmm. getting to have just such a blessing of a relationship with your daughters and with your sons. But that doesn't happen on accident. And thankfully, the Lord works despite some of our weaknesses and failures too as parents. I'm sure that there are times that you guys could point to and look at and say, maybe I didn't handle that one so well, but thankfully the Lord can heal those wounds in time. But
yeah.
I know that for a lot of you guys who are listening, you got to start somewhere. It takes courage to start. But to push through that awkwardness, to develop a relationship with your wife, mm-hmm. with your kids, that's focused on the Lord, that's intentional, and face to face, I think that's so important. So,
as you were talking, I was thinking about that in this season that you're in now. Mm-hmm. It's really one of the easy things is to be affirming and positive and encouraging to mm-hmm. kids, and that just goes so well for a season. And then as we get kind of in the coaching years, it's awful easy to fall into a pattern of being critical,
yeah,
or even putting fear in their life. Well, if mm-hmm. you do that, this is going to happen and stuff. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that can come at the expense of not looking for opportunities to affirm or mm-hmm. encourage them. So we really want the balance or the majority of our energy to be spent in identifying, recognizing positive behavior and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then when you get to consultant, you're back to, well, I can't be criticizing or mm-hmm. trying to put fear in them. I need to be back to encouraging and
yep.
affirming them. So there's kind of that in and out of that, in yep. and out of that phase of the criticism can just take over, and it can kind of, you know, you can just, when things aren't going as well and you actually see them in a season where they're not making the best decisions mm-hmm. and there's this, well, which road are they going to end up on in the long term, mm-hmm. you know, and you start becoming the hammer, and you don't want that to be your go-to all the time.
Especially if you're the grandparent.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Sure. You don't want that to happen at all. I mean, you know, I kind of pounded on the technology a little bit, and yet two, three, four times a month, I text my grandkids. You know, they're at a distance, and I text them and just say, hey, how's your day going? How did the concert go? How did your test go yeah. today? Mm-hmm. You know, and we do a little conversation back and forth. And you talk about melting your heart. Our 17-year-old granddaughter, about 3 weeks ago, texts us or calls and says, hey, I haven't seen you guys for quite a while. Could I just come down by myself and spend a weekend with you?
That's
Holy
awesome.
Holy cow, are you kidding me? Talk about clearing a calendar mm-hmm. in about 30 seconds.
Yeah.
You betcha. Uh-huh. And we had a great time. We didn't do anything real hard, special, travel all over, anything like that. We just hung out for 48 hours, mm-hmm. you know, and it was great. And
nice.
You don't get those kind of opportunities if you're not involved in your
yeah.
in your kids' lives. And when they were 8, 9, 10 years old, not mm-hmm. 17 years old.
Right.
So like you said, start now.
Yeah.
Wherever you're at, start now. Get
right.
with them. Meet them. Be with them. Hang out with their buddies and their friends mm-hmm. once in a while. You know, just once in a while. You don't have to do it all the time.
Yeah.
Be
yeah.
a weird
yeah.
parent.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. And it's you're right. It's never too late.
Exactly.
I mean, it may
yeah.
be easier if we started
yep.
at the beginning and we
yeah.
had the perfect
sure.
plan.
In
sure.
an ideal
but,
world.
But that doesn't
right?
happen in any
yeah.
family. But it's never too late to start. I mean, our kids want a relationship.
Yeah.
They do.
You know, like Joe said, he knows guys that are 60, 70 years old mm-hmm. that are waiting for their dads to tell them they're proud of them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
to affirm them, and they never got that.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
it's never too late to do yeah. that in our kids' lives.
And it might be harder if you hadn't built that relationship from the get-go.
It will be.
But
yep.
there is nothing impossible with God.
Mm-hmm.
He can overcome any gaps in our parenting, any gaps in our weaknesses as men, weaknesses as dads. He can do incredible things, absolutely.
Yeah.
Where we have failed, he is the perfect father. And I think we can learn from him to
sure.
seek reconciliation mm-hmm. in our relationships with our kids and start anew if we have fallen off. Absolutely.
Just one thing I want to point out that I think is so important is in that hierarchy, God first,
yep.
our spouse Husbands needs to be
wife.
Second,
yep. mm-hmm.
the kids come in right behind it.
Yep.
So it's so important that you and your spouse are on the as much on the same wavelength as you can be, but
yeah.
to be together with how you're raising your kids and what you're doing, and not to just put your kids on that pedestal
mm-hmm.
above your spouse, mm-hmm. especially. Very, very important. And I hope guys will take that
yeah.
to heed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's totally a agree. Cliche that I think of kind of going back to what you were referring to, where doing the right thing is always the right thing, even if nobody else is doing it.
Yeah.
And we may not find other men that are affirming their kids or mm-hmm. telling them they're proud of them, but that mm-hmm. doesn't mean it's not the right thing to do. But yeah. doing the wrong thing is always the wrong thing, even if everyone else is doing it. And yeah. that's burning our kids out with too much activity mm-hmm. or whatever it may be.
Yeah. I love it. I appreciate mm-hmm. you guys sharing your wisdom and experience and the things that you've learned over the years as you've kind of moved through these different stages. And yeah, I'm excited to go through the stages, and I'm at the very beginning of this journey. And I know that there are guys listening who are all over the spectrum of just starting out. And those are guys that I know and I'm friends with, and guys who are coaching, and they're in the whirlwind right now and just trying to keep their heads above water and keep their family focused on what's the most important thing. And guys like you who have moved into the consulting mm-hmm. phase and grandparent phase and are enjoying the fruits of a life well lived. So I'm grateful for the ministry that you guys have displayed over the years and your willingness to come on the show. And guys, I just want to end with an encouragement that, especially if you feel like I can't fix it, or you're not sure where to start in your relationship with your kids, that we have guys in our church who would be more than happy to mentor you through that mm-hmm. season. So please reach out. You can always reach out to me at my email. My email's on the website. I would love to talk with you about how to pair you up with somebody who can help coach you through or consult you through a season of how to build and strengthen your relationship with your kids. So if that's you, please don't hesitate to reach out. But with that in mind, guys, thank you so much for joining us. And for those of you who are listening, thank you for being with us for another episode of the Wake Podcast. We will see you next time.